Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. This week we are continuing with our look at all of the pre-war businesses that exist in the Fallout universe, and there are a lot of them. I'm going to try to finish up the B's this time, and we're only through A and B as of today's episode. Let's hope I can get through the rest of the B's, and then we're on to, well, you guessed it, the C's. So before we get started, though, thank you so much for the positive responses to last week's episode. I've heard from a number of you that you appreciated the episode, you enjoyed it, and you might have had a few different perspectives and some minor criticisms, but for the most part, it was very positive. And thank you for the respectful way in which you shared your criticisms and critiques. I do appreciate that. Maybe I'll mix in some more episodes like this in the future. But this week, we're back to pre-war businesses, so let's get on with it. Now, like usual, there will be some of these businesses that have a lot of details and a lot of information, and some will be minor little references. And we're going to start with a little guy this week, Boston Direct. Now, think about the last time you played Fallout 4, wandering around in the Commonwealth, looking at all the debris, the broken down vehicles and shipping containers and transit of all sorts of different kinds, the monorail, the trains, the trucking. Well, Boston Direct is a freight transport company that, as far as we know, only worked in the Commonwealth, but may have gone further. We just haven't seen them outside of the Commonwealth and in games outside of Fallout 4. And on top of that, there aren't actually that many of these trailers that you can find throughout the Commonwealth. In fact, these are the locations where you can find the logo for Boston Direct. It looks like, well, there's this kind of juxtaposition here. The trailers that go on the back of these trucks look very Art Deco. They're very smooth, and they've got these kind of rounded shapes, these long rounded shapes with these curves and lines like that. And yet the logo for Boston Direct looks all angular and modern. Boston Direct, freight transport is all it says. And you can find a few of these around. There's at least one that you can go in and you can find some items inside of it, like ammunition and chems. So you might assume that that means that that's what they were shipping, maybe ammunition or chems or both. But this appears to be the remnants of somebody long after these shipping trailers were no longer in actual use, using it as some sort of makeshift home and leaving their ammunition and their chems behind. Because we all know the wasteland is not a very safe place. Speaking of transportation, you don't just ship objects and products. people need to get around too. And that's where Boston's Transit Authority, Boston MTA, comes in. And the MTA stands for, well, Massachusetts Transit Authority. So, close to Boston, but, you know, not exactly the same word. So Boston, Massachusetts Transit Authority. And this is a continuation off of Boston's subway system, which is actually the oldest in the United States, originally built in 1897. So we're going way back in time. And this eventually evolves into a much larger, more dynamic system that integrates other areas around Boston. For example, it extends out to Cambridge, Malden, Back Bay, Scully Square, and other portions of the city as well. And now, a few hundred years after the Great War, it doesn't actually work as a subway system anymore. However, the Wasteland has found a way to use portions of it in many different ways. There are parts of these stations that have absolutely been cut off due to either rubble or infestation from feral ghouls. There are other locations that have been turned into, well, interesting kinds of places for people to use in ways that were never intended. And there's many different lines with different colors. So here, let's go through the details here. The red line is what connects travelers from Cambridge to Boston Common and also to South Boston. And this line includes College Square, Park Street, Andrew Station. Then we have the orange line, which goes from West Roxbury to the Medical Center South, and then Malden Center and the Dig. And it's interesting how all of these things connect. The blue line, Revere Beach Station, Boston Airport, Scully Square, and Postal Square. And then the green line goes from Vault 88 to Fensway Station, Copley Station, Park Street Station, and Valenti Station. And then there's the monorail. And the monorail is technically part of this entire system. It goes above ground and connects Quincy to the theater district and the financial district, and then eventually goes to Charleston, and then eventually ends up in Lexington, and it also connects to the Mass Bay Medical Center. So if you track all of these things, you'll see that they're all connected. Now, they aren't absolutely traversable by any means, because many of these locations you can't actually go underground and follow them through, of course. But they do have some other interesting details, like, for example, the Third Rail is located within the Scully Square station in Good Neighbor. The actual station for the subway was transformed into a bar. Even stranger and more interesting, Park Street Station was closed by the MTA when they started with the creation of Vault 114. They needed to excavate in that area, and they connected the infrastructure of the vault into the subway network. And here's some other fun little bits of knowledge. Did you ever wonder or notice that you can still hear announcements in different subway stations? That's a thing. That's somehow, that system is still working. Also, Parker Street Station has a reference to the monorail system and calls it the Mono Trail. Kind of a pun in reference to the Boston Trail, so that's kind of fun. Now, you may also be wondering, is there an in-game map layout? If you've been to any of these cities in our world, you can find map layouts of all the subways. And of course, they aren't technically correct. If you've ever look up a video about subway map layouts compared to the real world and how they actually match reality, they're often very simplified with much more straight and kind of gently curved lines rather than the organic nature of the actual setup. But you can't find one of those in game. It doesn't exist. But people have spent time, of course, and posted online images of ways that they've figured out all of these, well, different lines of the subway connect. And that's actually pretty cool, because they would. They would actually exist that way. We just don't have a map in the game. So there you go. That's the Boston MTA, which is based off of the Boston Bay Transport Authority, MBTA. Have you ever wandered around in Appalachia in Fallout 76 and come across what appears to be this outdoor kind of location? You go up some stairs on all four sides, and in the middle you find six very cylindrical, large, they almost look like shelters, but they're not actually shelters. There's usually, and sometimes these things are broken down, but there's usually some form of overhang over the area that kind of shades it from the weather and from the sun. And then above that, sometimes there are satellite dishes looking up into the sky. And in among these big cylinders is a computer terminal. Well, that whole setup is part of the bot stop. Now, what is a bot stop? Well, the bot stop is a location, an actual business that existed pre-war, where you could go up to one of these six robot fabricators and decide what kind of robot you want to make right there and take home with you. This includes Mr. Handy or Mr. Gutsy or even an Assaultron. Now, if you had visited one of these locations just days before the Great War happened, you would have noticed that there was a robotic assistant that was working on these platforms, probably trying to get people to come over and check out how they can use the systems in order to make their own custom bots. And this was part of an enterprise that was expecting to build and expand these in a much further radius than just in Appalachia. In fact, there's a note that is part of a terminal entry. We'll call it what it is. It's a terminal entry. And it actually details that they're planning by the spring of 2078 to put these out into even more locations. This was part of a startup company working on custom robots for common people, people who happen to be in need of something like that. And not only could you go up to these locations and use the little console, put in your details, your personalized details about what you want the robot to be like, how you want to set it up, much like what you can do in Fallout 4 when you are building your own robots, you could also send in remote orders. So if you had a means of communicating, which I assume is part of why those satellite dishes are there, and I really need to do an episode diving into what is the extent of communication possibility in, well, in the pre-war world. Did they actually have an interconnected internet the way we do, or was it mostly satellite communication? I have a feeling it's the second one more than the first one. But things could still communicate at a distance, and you could send in your orders and get a robot made, and who knows, maybe the robot would just find its way back to your home and knock on your door and then show up the next day or something. I'm not really sure about those details, but it does seem like it's kind of a fun thing. In today's world, you can customize all sorts of things, you know, a guitar or a custom car that you're going to drive around and impress all of your neighbors with how loud it is and, well, maybe annoy them instead. But in this case, you could have your own custom robot, which raises the question, why do so many of the robots out in the wasteland appear to be just like each other and not these custom models? Well, there is a little note here about the return policy. You can still hear an announcement at one of these bot stop stations that says, additional hostiles en route, just don't let them hurt the merchandise because we don't allow returns. So I would imagine that without allowing returns, there may be a number of models that don't work when they finally get home. There are six of these bot stops in total across them. I'm going to save that because that's funny. We've got one in Charleston, one in Camden Park, one in Lewisburg, one in Berkeley Springs, northeast of Appalachian Antiques, and in Morgantown. And the logo is kind of cool. It's got this smooth kind of script, almost like a 1950s kind of fat, thick script that says bot stop with a big underline underneath it. And on many of them, there is a logo that includes what appears to be a Mr. Handy, a big red Mr. Handy coming out of one of those cylindrical manufacturing things, cylinders. I don't know what to call them. So there you go. That's bot stop. Go buy your custom robot. Well, back then. Over in a little remote corner of the map in Appalachia, near the dam, the Crevice Dam, I don't know how to pronounce that, Crevice Dam, kind of between there and Raleigh's Clay Bunker, a little bit more to the east, lies Braxton's Quality Medical Center. And this is clearly a quality medical center because it includes one of only a few documents that were from originally when this was in operation during the pre-war time. This transcript notes the method for constructing a skeleton for general use. Step 1. Acquire a cadaver. Step 2. Using a fillet knife, remove as much flesh as you can without marking the underlying bones. Step 3. Place the cadaver in a wooden box packed with calcium oxide. Wait a week. Step 4. Place the remains in a water flow of some kind, like a stream or river. Step 5, clean off any remaining flesh or ligamentation. Step 6, allows skeleton to dry in the sun. Be wary of predatory birds or wild dogs. Step 7, bleach and mount skeleton. Note, if your tombstone does not read rest in peace or some variant thereof, you are automatically drafted into the skeleton wars. What? Now you might be thinking, this is something left by a raider or a psychopath. No, this is a very old piece of paper from during the pre-war time. And the only other information we really have here are the terminal entries from some of the people who worked there, like this one, from Albert Johansson to Martin Cooper. Look, Marty, I don't care how you do it. Just divide the stock we have left and send it wherever you want. I'm getting the hell out of here. And if you had half a brain, you'd do the same. But if you insist on sticking around, then congrats. You've just been promoted. I left the patent design book behind. Because if you're really that hell-bent on saving the world, you're going to need it. Good luck making any sense of it, by the way. And then we have a personal log, noted, is he kidding? Johansson has lost his mind, I swear to God. I knew something was wrong when all these orders started pouring in for stuff we can't make. But there he was, standing behind my desk, saying, do the best you can and we'll deal with the rest later. If someone gets hurt or dies because the boss was too selfish to know when to say no, then I'll make damn sure he is the one who'll have to handle it when later gets here. What? This is a kind of a mystery site. There isn't a whole lot of information here. You can tell by the name Braxton's Quality Medical Supplies that this is supposed to be making medical supplies for, it appears to be, research locations, doctors and labs who are doing work on, well, understanding medicine better, using things like skeletons or corpses or things like that. But the reference here to the skeleton wars is a bit odd, right? Did somebody go crazy? It appears like these people survived the initial attacks from the bombs, but then one of them seems to be thinking that skeletons will rise and go to war, like zombies or something. I'm not really sure, but it is an intriguing place. If you want to go look for it, head over to the mire between the two locations I mentioned before, between the dam and the bunker, and then a little bit more to the east. So if you go to halfway vertically between the two and then go about the same distance to the right on the map, you'll get there. Definitely worth checking out. And if you have any other insight into this location, let me know, because it is a little bit weird, or maybe a lot of bit weird. Oh, and before we go on to the next one, this location is also a part of the quest line for one of the companions, Sophia Daguerre. I don't know how to pronounce that. She's the astronaut that lands back on Earth and is very confused about how much time has passed, all of that. It turns out that Braxton's Quality Medical Supplies has her medical records. Why would that be? Maybe it was a convenient place to put on the map and just have an interesting medical kind of location that might have shared her medical records with someone else. Or maybe there's something else going on there. I'm not really sure. Seems like another future episode to dig into her entire quest line, The Woman Who Fell from Earth, and get some more details there, because I don't remember off the top of my head, just for this episode about these businesses, how all of that plays out. So being completely transparent here, I don't remember what the connection is there, but maybe we'll have to dig into that. And if you do, then comment on the Discord or let me know.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/49ers or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/49ers.
Next, we've got this little business that only shows up in Fallout 2 and Tactics called Brigham. Brigham, B-R-I-N-G-H-A-M, was a pre-war scientific accessory manufacturer. You would know them, if you've played Fallout 2 or Tactics, as the company that created the Needler pistol, the HN Needler cartridge, and the armor-piercing variant, the HNAP Needler cartridge, in Fallout 2. Now, if you haven't played Fallout 2, the Needler is basically a dart gun. It's a pistol that can shoot hypodermic needles for, well, you know, knocking out, tranquilizing your enemies, and making them easier for you to deal with in a fight. We don't really get any more information about Brigham specifically, but it is interesting that although they show up in Fallout 2, we didn't get the same company on similar weapons in later games, because you can shoot syringes in later games, but they're not Brigham, or at least they're not labeled that way. In Fallout 4, there's the syringer, but it looks more like a pipe rifle, like something somebody pieced together on their own, than something like this object that's manufactured by an official company. And the pistols themselves look very polished and designed and manufactured by, say, some sort of industrial process, than rather than just sticking a bunch of pipes together in some form of, chemical agent or gas to push the syringer out. So they're very different, but that doesn't mean that maybe the one inspired the other, but we don't really know. There's not any other information there, and the ones in the later Fallout games don't actually have any labeling at all. So I guess headcanon time, maybe it was inspired by the Brigham ones. Maybe the Brigham ones fell apart and were not maintained like some of the other weapons, the other pre-war weapons, or maybe not. Maybe we'll never know. The stylish Art Deco remains of the Broadway cinema are still located in Washington, D.C., in Seward Square. And this location still stands, but on the marquee, there still reads the last movies, the last films that ever showed at this theater location. Frozen in time below the vertical Broadway lettering that pillars atop the front of the marquee. And then below that, you have cinema, all in big letters, big greenish-blue letters. And then there's this red boundary that goes around it all. And below that is the marquee. And frozen in time, it says, now playing. And listed there are four different movies. One Wife, Hold the Meatballs, I Married a Maoist, the anti-communist sentiment, right? Raz Bastion and the Amazons of Zarn, which I'm assuming is a sci-fi film, and Hush, Sweet Senator, Hush. Hush, Sweet Senator, Hush, which may be a political romance? Don't know. But one anti-communist film, one comedy, probably, One Wife, Hold the Meatballs, a sci-fi film, and a political romance. Interesting stuff. I love the different names here. And the way that the architecture looks, it definitely has that Art Deco kind of thing. There's a Nuka-Cola machine that's still actually one on each side of the front entryway. But otherwise, the building is smashed to pieces. It looks like it's barely holding together. And there isn't really that much else to say about it. You can't actually get into the theater and look around. It's all closed off in the game and theoretically, you know, busted up and not actually traversable, or for whatever reason. Usually it's just they didn't want to design the inner part of the building because it didn't play into any quest line or whatever. But you can still go see it. It's between 4th and 5th Streets on Broadway Boulevard. So go check it out. Buy a Nuka-Cola. Check out the marquee, have a little chuckle, and move on to our next location.
Communists detected on American soil. Lethal force engaged.
So another tiny location, another place mostly is just a sign. You can't actually go in the building. It's found off the main road through Freeside. This is in Fallout New Vegas, slightly west, southwest of the King's School of Impersonation. And if you go down that way, you'll find Buck's Steakhouse. This is a restaurant. It's an unmarked location. There's basically a sign that's there. There's a script that says Bucks. And then in big, thick letters, it says Steakhouse below it. It looks like a pretty common building. And strangely enough, the sign is on the smaller, like, right side of the building above the doorway. But there's a much broader, broad side of the building that faces the street where the sign probably would have been more effective. But putting a sign up there may have obstructed some of the windows in the three-story building. So there you go. Other than that, we don't know a whole lot about them than maybe the fact that they offer a Sunday buffet. And how do we know? Well, it's not like it's on a terminal or a piece of paper or an advertisement. It's literally the very bottom of the sign underneath Steakhouse. It says Sunday buffet. Sunday steak buffet. Do you know of anywhere that advertises a steak buffet? That seems kind of unique. Not that you can't get steak at some buffets, but that being, it's a steakhouse, and that's kind of the thing that they're pitching is, come on Sunday, eat a ton of steak. I don't know. I don't know if I can handle that. So there you go. Buck's Steakhouse. We've got a number of these smaller locations. This one is Bumbalow's. It's a pre-war children's toy manufacturer. The company is mentioned in an article from the Capital Post. So this is Fallout 3, and it's just this article in the Post about a bidder on the United Nations building after the UN was disbanded. Now, that's clearly the intent of the Post, to let us know that the UN has been disbanded before the bombs dropped. That's how dire the situation was. But the idea here was that it was going to be transformed, or at least they were hoping to transform it into an East Coast superstore for Bumbalow's. You're taking something like the United Nations and turning it into a toy store. Now, this is clearly symbolic of the ridiculousness of the time, where the UN would no longer be needed, but yet you could sell tons of toys to children, because that's somehow of equal importance. That sound effect is so satisfying. I'm just going to keep using it between each of these smaller locations. So let's go to the next one, Burnett and Associates. This was a pre-war art company, and they, as far as we know, made landscape art, probably for the enjoyment of the public and people who want to decorate their homes or businesses, that sort of thing. We only know about them, and this is Fallout 4, because they show up in the list of treasures of Jamaica Plain. And this list has a number of different references, but there's really not a whole lot here other than noting that in the inventory that they are one of the art and life displays that is featured here. So the landscapes of Burnett and Associates, then you have jewelry by D. Miller and Sons, Colonel Vase, circa 1781. A colonial vase. I'm reading that incorrectly. Modern clothing gifts from Fallon's. Some of these other references to these other businesses or whoever that, of course, we'll get to in the future, but you may find those familiar. So other than this being listed among the treasures of Jamaica Plain, there's really not much else we can know about them. So there you go. Go get your landscapes, I guess. Next on the list, another small business, or at least a business that we don't know much about. I should call them that. Burnside Bank and Loan. This is in Fallout 3, located in Washington, D.C. This is a bank. It's in the DuPont neighborhood. You can find a building left there, but it is absolutely blown apart. Many of the floors, the top floors, are just missing. It's full of rubble. You can't go in it. Outside of that, there is no other reference to Burnside Bank and Loan. This may be the only location, or it may be a chain, and we just don't see any of the other locations in the places that we've been able to go in the games. How do we know it's Burnside Bank and Loan? Because there's a gigantic sign that is still clinging to the very edge of the building along some of the steel girders, which appear like part of the original architecture. By the way, they don't seem like the facades fell off in those sections. In fact, there are large sections of the side near the sign that just have these steel girders that are just open to the environment. The rest of the building, however, looks like it's manufactured by a bunch of concrete blocks that have mostly been destroyed. If you're looking to find Boston's best beer of 2051 and 2062, then check out none other than Gwinnett Brewery. This is, of course, a location that shows up in Fallout 4, and it feels like a brewery you'd go to today, or at least it was. This was founded by Button Gwinnett, and according to not in-game information, the Fallout 4 Vault Dweller Survival Guide, we know about the Boston's Best Beer in 2051, 2062. We also know that they created many different kinds of beers, pale ales, Peabody Pilsners, Dead Redcoat Ale, and the Bunker Hill Brew. They would give tours of the location, which if you've ever been to a beer tour, they're kind of fun. You get to see the big vats and how they manufacture everything. Then when you were through with the tour, they'd give you samples. There was merchandise you could buy. This was a whole thing, and it very much feels like a real-world location today. You can go visit it in Fallout 4. There's a big, what looks like, wooden beer barrel up as the sign in front of, well, it's seems like a big garage door kind of opening thing for the trucking. There's a big truck trailer sitting out front kind of blocking the view a little bit. But if you look above that, you'll see Button Gwinnett Brewery in what appears to be a hand-sketched script on the beer barrel above the building. You can go inside, you can look around. There are many things that you can still check out in this location. And it's just north of the police station. So if you're over that way, head a little bit north, check out the brewery, go on a tour, or just, you know, pretend. Have you ever noticed the calendars sitting around in the world that note things like, well, the date being September of 2077? And on the top of the calendar, there is kind of this advertisement slash model. At the top, you've got this attractive woman holding onto a propane tank, and around the image, it says lasting quality, natural gas products, Mrs. Toasty Flame 2077, which implies that there was a competition and that they would determine who every year was their, I guess, their model sponsor. This is the Bysshe company, B-Y-S-S-H-E. I may not be pronouncing that correctly. They are a natural gas company, and there's a number of things going on here. They show up first in Fallout 3. They show up again in Fallout 76. Not only did they work in natural gas, but they also did research. In 2077, they operated a research vessel, the USS Ozymandias. That might sound familiar, because they were probing the area of Point Lookout for natural gas resources. And strangely enough, they're also connected to the development of the Imposter Sheep Squatch. This was an Assaultron dressed up as a Sheep Squatch that you can fight in Fallout 76. And it's not a joke. Bring some friends, unless you are, you know, one of those, you know, 10,000 hour players with maximum stuff, which in which case you've probably already done this quest. But there's all sorts of interesting stuff going on here. Seems like a shady company. They've got some other connections to other interesting people in both games, and would probably warrant at least most of a major episode on them by itself, because there's a lot to dig into here. So we're just going to end this episode with a reference to them and leave the possibility to come back and visit them and the way these quest lines play out in the future. So again, that's Bysshe Company, the natural gas Bysshe Company. I don't know how to pronounce that. If you do, let me know.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
All right, we made it. We got through all the B's. We're on our way to the C's. Next time we dive into one of these episodes, we're also getting close to the end of the month already. It's amazing how fast time goes by. Next week on Wednesday, the 28th, we will be recording our patron episode. So if you'd like to join us, patreon.com/FalloutLorecast is the place to go. Assaultron levels and higher can join us every month for these episodes. And they're always a ton of fun. Last time we talked about what the actual canon ending of Fallout 4 should be, and I'm sure we're going to have a fun topic this week. And also, if you are signed up at that level, you can join us and discuss and put your vote in for the topic that we do cover, because these are all decided primarily by the patrons, and then I kind of help sculpt the idea into a listenable episode. But for the most part, the ideas come from all of you, so thank you so much for that support. Also, welcome to the Patreon to Andy Beam Imperator, John F, and Ethan L. There's other letters there after that. I'll just call you that. You know who you are. Thank you so much for the support. And if you'd like to join us, patreon.com/falloutlorecast, you can get ad-free episodes. You can get all sorts of things, t-shirts and stickers, and join us for patron chats. Lots of fun stuff. And you can also support us at the SentryBot tier, where you get shout-outs every week, like DustyRay85. Other ways to help out would be leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you're in the US and you leave a review, I will read it out on a future episode because those are the ones I can see right now. Also, if you leave a 5-star review on any other platform, that would be super helpful. Share the show with your friends. And as we get into what is appears like the next 6 months and then all of a sudden season 2 of Fallout on TV, there's going to be a lot more buzz around Fallout coming soon. So get ready for it. It's going to be fun. And if you happen to know people who are into the show and they're like, I wish I knew more about the world, send them this way. There's lots of episodes. There's all sorts of fun things for them to check out in order to get up to speed on that before season 2 starts. So thank you for all the support. Thanks for being here. And I guess prepare for the skeleton war, whatever that is. See you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.